Well, I'm ready to go when you are. I've got my classic match ready. Ready to go here and sorted. Did you look back the goals and stuff?
Wait a minute. You've actually done some work for a change.
Exactly. That's two pods in a row. Can you believe that?
Hi folks, and welcome to the next edition of the iReady podcast, season 4, episode 9. My god, we've done 9 episodes. As ever, I'm your host. As ever, I was trying to think what I was going to say there. God. I'll start that one again.
Hi. Oh god. Derek, get your shit together, man, for God's sake.
I wish I fucking could today.
Nightmare. Right, let's try again.
Hi folks, and welcome. I can't even fucking say this now. Composure.
Oh dear, dear. You'll have to excuse me, because I've just I've got a can of Pepsi Max here, and it's filling up with gas big time, so you might hear the old belch or maybe something for the other end, so I'm just apologising now before we get started.
I would be happy to do something for the other end now, you know. I really didn't
want you to do a belch coming for the other end, mate, because as Billy Connolly says, you would maybe feel it trickle down the back of your left knee, you know what I mean?
So, after the fourth one. Hi folks, and welcome to the iReady podcast, season 4, episode 9, and we're back again. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave.
9 episodes, Derek, absolutely incredible. Is this the most that we've ever done in one season, do you think?
Not quite, but it's the most we've done for about, since last year anyway.
Well, yes, hello and welcome. For a change, we are recording in the afternoon because we're both off, and we've got a big match to look forward to, or maybe not to look forward to at the weekend, but we'll get into that later on, Derek.
Exactly, yes. So, well, we'll just crack on, as we always do, and yep, we will go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. Right, we've got 4 games to cover, so not too much to go over. Bit of a mixed bag in terms of results, but certainly performance-wise, a bit iffy as well. But Saturday, the 1st of April, it was a 1-each draw at home to Motherwell. We lined up Fotheringham, Hodgson, Kiernan, Hill, Wallace, Heineman, Toril, Holt, Mackay, Miller and Wycorn. On the subs bench, Alnwick, O'Halloran, Dodu, Gardner, Halliday, Windass and Senderos.
Yep.
What's your memories of this, Dave?
My memories are that I thought in the first half it was pretty even Steven. I didn't think we played that great, and then we sort of stepped up slightly in the second half. But I'm sure you'll have a much better analysis than what I do, Derek, as always.
I would maybe say not better. I would say probably more accurate, maybe.
Yes.
In terms of the first half, I thought we were absolutely shocking, as bad as we've been since Kashina taking over. Just really, really dismal display. Certainly, you know, fair play to Motherwell. They were right up for the game. They were chasing every ball. They weren't giving us any time on the ball. We weren't getting any breaks of the ball either, but we're second to every ball, and the ball was just bouncing awkwardly every time.
Yep.
But we weren't up for the races at all. And then at half time, something strange. I only seen 2 subs warming up, and you know, never thought anything of it. I thought maybe they were just getting part of the team talk. And then all of a sudden, 3 subs at half time. What was that all about? Yep.
I'm actually looking here, Derek. I'm looking back at you, as you always send me a wee text at half time when you're at the games, and I'm not. And I'm looking at your text here that you sent me. Well, I'll read it out.
Go ahead.
This is your analysis of the first half, right? The whole team are fucking dire. Not putting challenges in, not working together. Where was the pressing from the Hamilton game? We can't play as Motherwell are doing it. Don't know what that means. And then after that, just as the second half's about to start, you've put in three subs at half time. Bold. That's just how it's gone.
Yes.
Jake, you can do better than that now, Derek.
I can try, certainly.
Expert analysis via text message. Right,
bold.
Yeah, bold.
Bold. Certainly it was a bit of a shocker, and we all thought this was something special in terms of it's either going to make him or break him, this, and certainly it did work to an extent. The players that came off was Wallace, Hill and Hodgson. Now, it since turned out that apparently Wallace and Hill were injured, and Hodgson, yep, I think, was suffering as well from, I think it was an eye thing or yep, some sort of illness, I can't remember.
Now, from what you're saying there, Derek, I want you to remember this, because I think that this could actually be a bit of a blessing in disguise. And I'll get onto that after, you know, you talk about the match. But they three being out injured, I think, has actually helped us big time. But we'll talk about that after the game.
Yeah, certainly. The players that to come on was Michael O'Halloran, Andy Handley. Andy Halliday and Joe Gardner. And it was strange because they had Toral and Halliday lining up in the centre back. You know, they were, I think we played a back three consisting of two of them, and it was, yep, what the hell's happening here?
Was Senderos on the bench?
Senderos was on the bench, which was absolutely baffling. So it just shows you how out of, yes, favour he really is. And yep, there was a lot of criticism for Kashinia doing that, and especially from the media sorts. It's quite obvious that we don't have the depth of squad there, and that's the reason why he's on the bench, if he can't, yep, get a game to get put in defence in his natural position.
Yeah.
But certainly it seemed to work. We got more of a grip of the game. We played a lot better. We're chasing a lot of the balls. In fairness, though, Motherwell were still up for it, and they did test us quite a few times, and it was Fotheringham that saved us on numerous occasions.
Yep.
Obviously, in the first half, I meant to say this, that Motherwell scored in the third minute.
I was going to say it. I missed it. Right.
Yes, Motherwell scored in the third minute, and you know they just capitalised from there by playing better.
Yep. It was your typical cross ball header, was it though? It was a cross ball, and then Molt scored, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I've been quite impressed with him this season, Derek. He always causes us problems. I don't mean I'm impressed because he's causing us problems, because Christ, just about any half decent striker's been doing that all season, but. In other games I've seen him, I've actually been quite impressed with him. He looks really quite fast, big and strong up front. Maybe the sort of type of player that Joe Gardner's trying to be and failing to be, but or the type of player that we're wanting Joe Gardner to be. But no, I've been quite impressed with this guy so far, this boy Molt.
Yeah. Just on the note of Gardner there, he did actually score in the 61st minute. Mm-hmm. It was a great cross from Miller, and I think it was some sort of, you know, almost scissor kick type thing, or kind of half volley or whatever it was. It was that long ago, but we're used to doing pods, you know, quite quick in between these days.
Exactly.
But it's, you know, certainly a decent, well-worked goal anyway. For the rest of the game, you know, it was a bit of batting forward, and we did, you know, force a few good saves from the Motherwell, yeah, keeper, but again, we were quite slack at the back, which was to be expected given the fact, yes, that we had played three at the back. But that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah.
So we came away with a point, disappointing, but you know that's what it was.
Going back to like the way that you, I was trying to watch it, Derek, on a link, and it wasn't that great. So I was looking as I do a lot. I send you messages back and forward, and going by that message that you sent me, I thought to myself, "Oh God, I'm hoping that this isn't your typical." You know, the players raised their game for the first couple of matches when a new manager's in, and then it goes completely flat and back to where it was. That's what I was worried about. that it was going to be like that, that there was, you know, it didn't seem to be anything was working, and the players didn't seem to be gelling under the new. And as you say, the media, I think, have been absolutely shocking for the new manager, to be honest with you. It's to be expected, right enough, but already are kind of questioning everything that he does. And it does sort of spill onto the terraces, that as well, you know, when you're constantly hearing these things. And I think that the fans were worried as well, but thankfully going into the next match, it kind of changed our opinion again, which is good.
Yeah, well, it was Wednesday the 5th of April. It was a nil each draw away to Kilmarnock.
Sorry, I take that back. It's the next game that I'm talking about, but there you go. On you go.
Yeah. Yep. Wednesday the 5th of April, 0-0 draw away to Kilmarnock. Now, he made six changes, and mm-hmm. a couple of the changes which Dave alluded to there yep. were bringing in two youngsters.
Yep.
We lined up Fotheringham, Tavernier, Bates, Wilson, Bierman, Halliday, Holt, Heineman, Mackay, Wycorn and Gardner. On the subs bench, we had Alnwick, Aidan Wilson, Dodu, O'Halloran, Windass, Miller and Toral. Now, obviously, Bates and Bierman were the two players that,
yes.
the two youngsters, and they have, to be honest, been, especially Bierman, been a revelation for the team.
Yep, definitely.
Yep. Just on, and we'll get on to, you know, Bates and Bierman at the end of the games here, but just to kind of cover the Kilmarnock game, we named the squad apparently a day and a half in advance of the game, which was quite unique and strange. Conor Salmon after the game claimed it was disrespect to do that. I mean, everything Rangers do is disrespect these days.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep, and quite ironic considering he blatantly handled the ball in the box as well to deny us a penalty, but we don't claim cheating like some other clubs in Glasgow.
No.
We did, you know, create a lot of chances, and there was a lot saved from the Killie keeper. Really not a lot to say much else about the game, to be honest, though, because it was fairly dull and boring. And
it was, Derek. The one thing that I will say is, going back, I was worried, as you say, but because of the performance against Motherwell in the first half, I took some positives in the fact that we played these two young lads, we got a clean sheet, and we did... I would say we controlled the game, but didn't make a lot of great chances. That was the only thing. But we certainly, I think, we looked very comfortable, controlled the game. I can't really remember, you know, me saying to myself at any point, "Oh, Kilmarnock, I've got a chance of stealing this," because I didn't think that, you know, that I just had a feeling it was going to either end 0-0 or we might have sneaked one right at the end. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
I mean, one of the guys in my office is a Killie fan, and we always have banter back and forwards, and he never actually said anything to me about the game. He normally always comes up to me and says, you know, yeah. a snidey comment. Never said nothing, so it's kind of, I think it's, again, you know, there's no much that can be said about the game. It was a nice yes. draw, but, you know.
But looking back, Derek, that might be a game that really costs us, though, because... you know, it's points like that and games like that that we really need to pick up, and that's been a problem all season, really, has been dropping points and things like that, you know, when we really should be capitalising on things. So I hope it doesn't, but it might end up like that, unfortunately.
Yep. Next game was Sunday the 9th of April. It was a 3-0 away win to Aberdeen.
Yep.
We lined up Fotheringham, Tavernier, Bates, Wilson, Bierman, Holt, Toral, Heineman, Miller, Wycorn and Gardner. On the subs bench, we had Alnwick, Hodgson, Wilson, Halliday, Windass, Dodu and Mackay. Now, before the game started, Kashinya joked that he could name the starting lineup for Aberdeen, and basically...
Disrespectful bastard.
Disrespectful. Hugh Keevans was doing his dinger about that,
no,
as usual.
Surely, no.
You know, and... ironically, he proved it was absolutely correct what he said. You know,
exactly.
He was having a wee bit of fun with the media, and you know, they were absolutely raging about it. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to the point about, you know, the media just don't seem to like him straight away.
Yep.
It was a decent first half from us. We certainly created a lot of chances. We had a lot of the ball. We never gave Aberdeen much of a sniff. And it all was working well until the 50th minute, where Heineman came off for some reason. We don't really know the reason why. He was playing very well.
Yes.
And I hope it wasn't this, you know, pish about we have to protect loney players, because, you know, our loney players go out and get injured, as we'll come to. But then after he came off, we played absolute dog shit for about 25 minutes. We were dire. We should have conceded. I'm surprised we never. And then Dodu came on, and that's when things really started to happen. It was 4 minutes of absolute genius play, and then we were just a dominant team from then on.
Yep.
Kenny Miller scored on the 79th minute, an absolute rocket of a shot from well outside the box at a tight angle. Just brilliant, brilliant piece of skill from him there. He scored his second on the 81st minute. Great composure after, but a great ball fed through from Dodu. And then Dodu himself on the 83rd minute, great individual skill to take the ball on, feigned one way and then cut the ball the second way to beat the keeper. Brilliant, just absolute elation.
Yep. And then straight after that, how unlucky was he not to score a second goal, or Kenny Miller to get his hat trick? Because if he'd have scored that second goal, it would have been even better, because he sort of jinked his way through and hit an absolute rocket, which cannoned off the bar straight to Kenny Miller, who couldn't have done it any more, Derek. A powerful header into an empty goal, and for some miracle, the Aberdeen defender managed to clear it on the line. Really unlucky, the two of them. That would have been a cracking goal as well.
Yep.
But as you say, Derek, we didn't play well for about 20 minutes. We were really poor, and I don't know if that's because Heineman went off or not. I don't know what the reason was that Heineman did get taken off. It's a bit of a strange one, but can I go back to the first half? Martin Wycorn again. No, I like Martin Wycorn, Derek, but the amount of chances that this guy is getting, and I'm not saying that they're easy chances, but chances that, you know, a good striker will score, it's cost us a couple of times against Celtic now in the big matches. Thankfully, it didn't cost us in that game as well. Martin Wycorn really needs to sharpen up, because he's getting himself into positions. He's playing well in matches. He's causing problems. He's getting his speed and his strength back, which we like about him. But he really needs to work on these finishing and these chances that he's got, because we could have easily have went 2-0 up at half time in that match, and it'd have taken the pressure right off us. Thankfully, we didn't need it at the end. I don't know if you think the same as what I do, but I just wish that he would sharpen up a wee bit. I don't know if he just needs a goal, Derek, or he needs to score a really good goal to get his confidence up that he'll be able to put these chances away. But it's starting to become a familiar pattern now in the matches.
I mean, the way the strikers have gone this year, and it's not just him, I'll get onto it again at the end of the games, but strikers have not been performing this year. They've not been scoring, and that's the reason why our goal difference is so low. We've only just got into double figures. As you said, he is playing well in games. He's chasing every ball. His work rate is brilliant. He's just it's not coming off for him. And whether it's a case of it's just not falling right, or it's just a case he's snatching at chances or whatever, strikers need to score at the end of the day. That's the role.
Yeah.
And somebody suggested it, I think it was in the We Welcome the Chase podcast, maybe his natural position isn't a striker. You know, maybe that is the case. So he maybe needs to sit a wee bit deeper and then be the one supplying the strikers, being that link between midfield and attack. So something we'll maybe need to look at. Anyway, it was a fantastic result, and it was a much-needed one, because a draw wouldn't have really done us. To be honest, I think we're going to finish third. I can't see us, you know, clawing anything back in Aberdeen.
It's going to be difficult, Derek. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a brilliant result for us, but what we need to do is make sure we don't drop any more points and hope that Aberdeen do. And I thought the next match Aberdeen had against St Johnson, that might have happened, but they managed to grind out that result as well. And that's what Aberdeen are doing. They're grinding out results, and we are, you know, just getting into that way just now, but we've only got ourselves to blame, Derek, if we do finish third. And as you say, our defence has been getting criticised a lot this season, but if we were scoring two or three, you know, three goals a game or whatever, putting away the chances that we're creating, we wouldn't be in this position. But again, that's all down to the players, it's all down to the management, it's all down to the players that we're bringing in. And you know, it's one of these things. It's not been great, but going back to that performance against Aberdeen, I was absolutely delighted with the full time score. You know, it's great, and you know we took, you know, completely sold out our away allocation again, and it was just fantastic. I felt really absolutely over the moon at the final score. I sat and I watched it, and my wee laddie was there as well, and even he was delighted as well that got there. And as you say, the turning point, Joe Dodu coming on, and there's been a lot of talk about him. Derek, do you think he should be getting his starting place, or do you think he's the perfect guy to bring on as a sub?
No, I think he should be getting a chance, because there's people like Michael O'Hara, O'Halloran, you know, he's had numerous chances coming on from the bench and even starting games, and we'll get into him, you know, later on in the pod. But, you know, compared with Dodu, you know, Dodu's had virtually no game time, and when he's came on, you know, it's been 50-50 whether it's been, you know, successful or not. A lot of the time he's been coming on for the last 10 minutes and been, you know, he's no other chance to get a foothold in the game.
I was listening to one of the other podcasts, and forgive me if it was either the Heart and Hand or it was We Welcome the Chase, but one of them had mentioned something, and I thought that's a really valid point, that when Dodu came on the last, remember when we played Partick Thistle and he came on as a sub and he scored two fantastic goals and we ended up winning the game 2-1 in the end, he got a start against Hearts and he scored that absolute peach, which was ruled, you know, which was not given, and it should have been. Mm-hmm. That was maybe the turning point for Dodu, because if that goal had have stood, who knows, you know, that might have cemented his place in the team after that, because it was a cracker of a goal. And he's been unlucky. But I do feel he's a goal scorer, Derek. I do feel that guy will get goals. If he's, you know, if he's put up front, he's really direct. He's great at running with the ball. He's got great control and everything. But I still don't know if he's maybe best coming on as a, you know, an impact player with half an hour to go. You know, it's something a bit different. It's a tough one, to be honest with you. I don't know what I would do if I was in that position to play him or...
Yeah,
you know, I honestly don't know, but that's up to the manager, eh? But no, absolutely delighted for Dodu as well, and an absolute cracker, another cracker for the Kenny Miller collection out there. Absolute peachy goal, that first one, brilliant.
Right, into the next game here. The last game we had was Saturday the 15th of April. It was a 2-0 win at home to Partick. Lined up Fotheringham, Tavernier, Bates, Wilson, Bierman, Heinemann, Toril, Holt, Mackay, Miller, Wycorn. On the subs bench we had Alnwick, Windass, Dodu, Halliday, Hodgson, Gardner and Aidan Wilson again. Comfortable win, never really looked like losing a goal despite what Gordon Dale said at half time. My dad texted me and said Gordon Dale's talking utter bullshit. He said we were playing bad and we could have been down a goal and things like that. What a load of rubbish. I've never seen any chances Partick made, really.
And as you say, controlled the first half, played well, a few decent chances, but at the same time I never thought that we were going to lose the match. I always, you know, knew that we would go on and score goals, Derek. So
yep, Miller scored in the 39th minute, a good header from a cross, I think it was from Tavernier if I can mind right, and Toril scored in the 54th minute, great link-up play between Toril, Heinemann and back to Toril again. Heinemann, I think we really need to try and, you know, sign him during the summer.
Yeah, I've actually in the last few games been really impressed with Toril as well, Derek. I think he's came onto a game as well.
Yeah.
He's that guy that's sort of, you know, he's kind of playing as that sort of defensive midfielder. I think he really relishes that, but I've been really impressed with that guy. Also, as you say, Heinemann is a class act. There's no getting away from it. I honestly don't think that we'll be able to afford him, to be honest with you. But Toral, I don't know if he's at the, you know, he comes to the end of his contract or no, but I've been impressed with him the last few games. That's, you know, the type of player that we've been needing. So sorry, go on with your analysis there. I'm butting in as usual.
Well, that was really about it for that game. There's not really much I can say. You know, good, comfortable win. Yeah. Leaves us in the league. Played 33, won 16, drawn 10, lost 7, scored 48, conceded 34, goal difference plus 14, and points 58. Sitting 9 behind Aberdeen, who are in second, 15 points to play for. 9 ahead of St Johnstone, who are in fourth, 15 to play for as well. In relation to them.
Yep. Going back, Derek, sorry. The two young lads, I've been really impressed. There was a lot of people, I was quite annoyed, and everybody's been saying this. They're talking about Bates. Now, here is a young laddie that's came in, his debut, you know, he's came in his debut. Everybody said, oh, he looked really nervy and stuff like that. That's totally to be expected. I think he's done really, really well. I think that Danny Wilson has been outstanding in the last few games. And as you know, I've always sort of championed him for a while as being our sort of main defender. We have been looking for a lot more. Maybe this sort of being experienced man there is really helping him out. Wilson, he's, you know, talking, you know, young Bates through. But Bates has certainly got the ability there, Derek. Fantastic in the air. Just, you know, if the ball comes in, just get it to fuck out of the box. Yeah. And that's just what, that's exactly what we've been missing. None of this playing the ball out for the back. I mean, that's great if you're bloody Barcelona or Bayern Munich or something like that, but no, when you're struggling in the SPL, you just need to make sure and get the ball out of your box and let the midfielders and your full-backs and your forwards think about playing the ball a bit. But, you know, in the first instance, just get the ball out. And that's just what this guy is. He's a big lumpy a guy, really good in the air. He looks really strong. And I think that's what Danny Wilson's been missing as well. Danny Wilson's great at breaking the play up and getting the tackle in, but when it comes to cross balls in the air, he needs somebody in there that can head the ball away, and that's what this young guy has been doing. So I've been really impressed with him. And as you say, Bierman in the Aberdeen game and the Partick Thistle game has looked absolutely fantastic. He does not look out of place one bit. He's never shown any nerves whatsoever. He's got forward, he's linked up fantastic. Also, his defensive duties, he's been excellent. I've been really, really impressed with this guy as well. So, you know, hats off to the two of them. And I wouldn't have any worries about the two of them playing in the next match. And I know a lot of people would, and there's been a lot of people have been saying, oh, but what if he's fit, would you not play him? I wouldn't have any worries about these two playing in that next match. I think the two of them are good enough to play in there. And as I say, with the likes of Terrell in front of them, has been playing well, and so has Jason Holt. Jason Holt's been excellent as well, changing his style in midfield. So no, I've been happy, Derek. I don't know if you feel the same way that I do.
Yeah, well, you kind of stole my thunder there, because that was my next part I was going to say.
There you go.
As you know, Danny Wilson has been fantastic. You know, Toral, you know, under Warburton, he seemed a very nervous player. Whether that was just down to, you know, lack of match fitness or what, but he was giving the ball away a lot. Yep. You know, his passing was, you know, a lot of the time it was hit and miss, but he's you know, shored up his game properly. Jason Holt has been fantastic since Kashina came in. Again, as we mentioned, Waghorn has been, you know, working very hard. He's been getting into the right.
Derek, I'm not slagging off Waghorn at all. I think going forward, he looks really dangerous, and he's getting into positions, and he's really causing a lot of problems. It's just his finishing. Yeah. That's the only thing that's letting him down, is his finishing. That's it. Everything else has been excellent. So just to, you know, it would be good, you know, for him to get a goal, and I think it would maybe boost his confidence. But that's been great.
But one of the the only player that's kind of maybe went backwards since he came in was has been Mackay, which, well, you know, I don't know what he's been a bit hit and miss all season.
Yeah,
I think they're still trying to ask too much of him, and there's too much expectation from fans. And you know, two things I'm going to mention just in relation to that. There's going to be a few, you know, rants about our fellow fans from me in this podcast, because their expectations are, you know, off the charts sometimes. Mackay has, he's got all the ability in the world, but he just doesn't seem to do it. His final ball has been atrocious sometimes, but the fans getting on his back, especially online the way he has, and then with him apparently turning down the first contract extension that Rangers have offered him, you know, fans are telling him to fuck off and all that kind of thing. Fans need to really get a grip with this. You know, contract negotiations don't, you know, don't get offered one contract and then that's it, they accept it.
The media play a huge part in this don't be, they sensationalise everything that comes to do with us, don't they?
Well, absolutely, and they've got to remember as well is that agents will have a lot to play in this as well to try and get a better deal for their client.
Yes.
So whatever you see in the media, don't believe and don't take as gospel straight away. There's always two or three steps behind it, which the actual reality. So fans need to actually get a grip in terms of, one, him accepting a contract, and two, his ability. Yes, he has been a bit hit and miss, a bit off form, his final ball needs worked on, but he's still a young boy. And at the same time, at the end of last year, the start of this year, the same fans that are getting on his back and saying he's pish are the same fans he's saying, you know, he was, you know, absolutely amazing. We've seen it in flashes this year where he's just got all the ability in the world. But again, we've seen in flashes as well, he's very one-dimensional when he takes on players.
Yes.
He's got to be given that time and he's got to be given that, you know, responsibility to try and develop his game. You know, so get off his back that way. In terms of what you were saying about Bates, yes, he was, you know, did look nervous. And I think at the start, maybe the first 10, 15 minutes of every game he's played, he has been a wee bit nervous. But again, as you said, that's to be expected. And
yeah,
he's came into the game. And there was guys saying, you know, on Twitter, he's not Rangers class, get him out of the team now.
Ugh.
For fuck's sake.
I know. How old is the guy, Derek? Is he 18? 17, 18?
One of them's 20, one of them's 17, I think. I'm just turning 18. So, I mean, again, it's the thing with some Rangers fans, and this is why social media is an absolute nightmare sometimes. You see the worst in people, and coming away with something like that, that's no way to try and encourage a player. These guys are actually on Twitter, I believe, Bates and Bierman.
Yes. You know,
so if they kind of see this, their confidence is going to go down. I think one of them's already came out and said before he broke into the first team, you know, he spent days crying because he didn't think he was going to make it at Rangers. So,
yep.
You know, you've got to give them encouragement, and coming away with shite like that is just absolutely atrocious for a fellow Rangers player.
And Derek, let's be honest, he take just Bates on his own at centre-half, I would say in the three matches he's played, he's made more of an impression than what Kiernan has all season. He's certainly done more than what Senderos has because he's never played. And, you know, Clint Hill gets a lot of plaudits, but I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that he scored that goal against Celtic and he's headed the ball clear a few times. I wouldn't say that Bates was, you know, probably at the moment, breaking into the team, he's done really well. His confidence will be on a high. You know, he would probably be on par with what Clint Hill is for me at the moment in there, because he basically is doing the same things as what Hill is supposed to be doing. He's there to win the high balls and to get the ball out of the box if there's been any danger, and he's done that. The game on Sunday will be completely different. There'll be a lot more pressure, but the game up in Aberdeen showed that Wilson and Bates can cope with the pressure, because up at Pittodrie it always is a difficult match and the fans are totally against you and Aberdeen are well up for it. So in that sort of 20-25 minutes that Aberdeen were on top, Fodringham, again, we've not said a lot about Fodringham, he's been outstanding, he's pulled off some incredible saves, but they two defenders have played a blinder as well. So
yeah.
I'm really pleased with Bates, and I certainly, again, I'm repeat myself again, I wouldn't worry if he was pitched into the game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. I'll be quite happy with that. One thing I want to just say about you know, the last few games with the way Cassini set up the team is, it was a big feature of Warburton's sides, both in the Championship and in the Premiership, that would create chances, but they would always go off target. One thing we've seen is certainly we've been getting things on target a hell of a lot more and forcing the keeper to make great saves. I mean,
yep.
see that keeper for Partick. if it wasn't for him, it would have been a cricket score. He pulled off some incredible... I mean, there was one save in the first half. It was Gorham-esque how he saved it.
He is a good goalkeeper, Derek. He's been playing in Scotland for quite a few years now, Jeremy. And it'd be fair to him, he should have been playing for bigger clubs than he has been. He is a very, very good goalkeeper, him. But as you say, it was him that kept the score respectable for Partick, because you know the amount of chances, especially the one right at the end of the match that he pulled off the two saves in a row, you know, right to death. I mean, they were absolutely incredible saves. But yeah, no, I'm feeling a lot more positive, Derek. I'm hoping that it's not going to be premature coming for the game on Sunday, but I certainly think that he's going in the right direction, and these two young lads are, you know, the two of them are, you know, big finds for us, and if they keep performing like that, that, you know, that's worth quite a few £1 million for us, trying to find players that, you know, are going to be as good as them, you know, when it comes to signing players. If he's got two good players in there already, that helps us out big time, you know. Yeah. So
Getting into the next games here, this is basically the rest of the games for the season now that after the split fixtures were announced. The next game, obviously, as you kind of alluded to, Sunday the 23rd of April, against Celtic at Hampden in the Scottish Cup semi-final, 12 o'clock kickoff. The week after, Saturday the 29th, another 12 o'clock kickoff at home to Celtic in the Premiership. The following weekend, Sunday the 7th of May, away to Partick in the Premiership, 12:15 kickoff. Another big game coming up, Saturday the 13th of May, at home to Hearts in the Premiership, 12:15 kickoff. Wednesday the 17th of May, the last home game of the season, against Aberdeen. It's a 19:45 kickoff. Why we need to have a Wednesday night fixture, especially, you know, such an important one at this stage of the season, is beyond me.
Yeah, strange, yep.
And the last game of the season for everyone is Sunday the 21st of May, away to St Johnstone in the Premiership, and that's a 12:30 kickoff.
Okay.
Obviously, the big one coming up is probably the game that really is the most important one.
Biggest game for us this season, Derek, I feel, because obviously they've won the league, that's gone. So this is by far the most important game. This is a game that we really need to concentrate on. This is the game that we really need to... won big time, and I think we're due, Derek, to be perfectly honest with you.
I mean, certainly, as I said in the last pod, is every Old Firm game we've played since coming back to the Premiership, we've steadily improved, I think.
Yes.
So hopefully we can get something out of it. As I keep saying, Celtic are no big shakes. I think, you know, with their dubious decision penalty against Ross County that went against them, they're rattled again. There's a narrative in the media now that they're pushing, and the media are allowing them, referees.
Derek, if I can come in there, I put a wee thing on. Somebody that I know on Facebook today, good Blue Nose, he's had a bit of a rant about it, and I had to go in and sort of do as well, because there's a few people I know on Facebook personally who are Celtic fans, and they were the first folk to jump in and go on about the referees, how they're against them and everything like this. And when I saw from their two flagship tabloid newspapers in Scotland, the Daily Record and The Sun, both put things in today, and I thought, this is just, it's absolutely scandalous that they can do this. I don't know if you've seen what The Sun, one of their main stories is, Derek. The Sun are basically, they've been speaking to John Hartson, who's basically saying that the referee, you know, he shouldn't be allowed to take charge of the match on Sunday because of the decision that he made against Celtic at that Ross County game. So straight away, that's putting pressure on the referee, basically be saying, you're obviously got it in for us and you shouldn't be playing. So that's going to, you know, that's going to play. And then going on to the Daily Record, basically, Ronnie Dyler, and referee killed my Celtic treble, do not do the same to Brendan Rodgers. So basically, again, blaming the referees. I mean, that's two of the main newspapers. Now, we all have a laugh and a joke about who really controls the media in Scotland. But again, anybody out there who goes on and says that the media are pro-Rangers really need to have a good look at themselves. It's blatantly obvious you know that they're trying to stir things up, they're trying to put extra pressure on the referees. It's even going into media. I don't know another country anywhere in the world that that would happen, you know, with the press when it comes to a specific football club. It's absolutely incredible, Derek, and I was flabbergasted when I read it. And I hope it doesn't put any bearing on the match on Sunday. But it's just, it's pathetic. It really is pathetic.
It's got to the stage, and it's laughable that this is the case. We, a lot of Rangers fans, actually including myself, want a dubious decision to go for us, just to wind them up even more, you know.
The whole thing as well, they're complaining about the referee, and you know the referee, but there's no complaints being made about how quickly Scott Brown's appeal was rushed through so that he can play the match on Sunday after him getting sent off. As a straight, you know, it's,
or rather how not quickly it was rushed through, you mean?
So you know there would be enough, you know, the adequate time there so that the appeal, you know, would go in the favour of them, so that he would be able to play against us. It's absolutely incredible. I, for one, am quite happy that Scott Brown's playing, because he's the type of guy that if things are not going his way, he'll do something stupid. Yep. So, you know, I'm quite happy that he's playing. I was, me and my wife and the kids were visiting friends of ours, and my friend is a bit of a Celtic fan, not an avid Celtic fan, but had that game on in the background. And he was watching it, and when Brown got sent off, I basically says to him, I says, he's an absolute idiot, a man. I says, he's the captain of your football team, he acts like an absolute idiot. And he wasn't very happy with me. And this was before he got sent off, I would like to say, that I was saying that about him. And then he got sent off. I says, was there any need for him to do that? I says, he's winning the match. I says, 2-1, you're not getting beat. I says, you've had that penalty against you. I says, and didn't get me wrong, the boy dived, the referee got it wrong. I says, but you still aren't getting beat. You've actually won the league. I says, why does he have to do something like that just because he's annoyed? And that's all it was. He was pissed off because they got that penalty given against him, and he took his frustrations out on a player. I says, that's disgraceful. And he had to agree with me, Derek. Mm. He actually had to agree with me, and he was annoyed that I said it the first time. But I'm not going to say I'm happy about him playing against us, but I would rather that he was playing against us, because he's the type of guy that will lose control at the slightest wee thing, which could go in our favour. So,
absolutely. Yep. Just the last wee point on this bit here before we move on to the boardroom section is, unbelievably, the media and the presser today asked if Pedro Cochino had any serious concerns about referees in this country, and he said, you know, compare and contrast the reaction from Celtic fans and officials, compare what they've said, this is what Cochino said: I have nothing to complain about on referees, it's a very difficult job being a referee.
Yeah, but Derek, we've been hearing this from that side of the city now for, you know, 20 years plus. It is this whole always cheated, never defeated attitude that they've got. It's incredible. And unfortunately, the press are completely on that side as well, and they will try every way they can to try and cause some sort of controversy when it comes to big matches. And it always seems to be when there's a big match concerning Celtic and Rangers. This is when it always seems to come out the week before, you know, that this happens, to try and put extra pressure, you know, before a big match. It's absolutely pathetic. It really is. And I can't remember, and I'm being serious, and maybe somebody will remind me, but have our officials, managers, or anything ever blamed, you know, or constantly went on about decisions that have went against us?
The way we deal with it, and from what I can remember, is we have a moan about it. Yeah, the referee, you know, got a decision wrong there, but that's about it. Then it's shut up, and the media don't talk about it, because we don't feed them that shite as well.
It's incredible, Derek. It all goes back, and it goes way back to the sort of when Martin O'Neill was in charge. Martin O'Neill, I'm not going to slag the guy off, he'd done very well at Celtic, but they had this mentality of nothing should be going against them, nothing, and if they get beat, it's because they were cheated out of it. And it goes all the way back to then, when you had guys like Hartson and Sutton and Thompson and Lennon all playing you know, at that team, and it was what was instilled into them. It's the fact that, oh, we weren't beaten there. Nobody beat us. We were cheated out of that. And it's gone on for then. And unfortunately, it's got worse for then. And that's what it came from, to be honest with you. But it's pathetic, Derek. And the way that the media feed off it is absolutely unbelievable.
Right, it's now time to go into the Blue Room. Right, just a couple of stories to talk about here. The first one I'll get over, done and dusted quite quickly because we can't really talk about it. The fraud trial for Craig White has started.
Derek, go and get me up to date with what you know here, because I thought it was supposed to have taken place 2 days ago, and then yesterday, and then I honestly don't know what's happening. And the fact that there's been no social media coverage by the mad Celtic fans out there, it leads me to believe that there's not really much has happened.
Basically, as far as I'm aware, it meant to have started on Tuesday there, but it was delayed for some unknown reason. Nobody really reported on it, and then it's just started back again today. So we're kind of going to leave it there, because obviously, you know, you don't want to talk about it. You could prejudice any case or things like that. So as we've said in the previous pod, it was scheduled for over a 2 month period. They've allowed for it just in case, because they do expect it to be quite in depth, so we'll see what happens there. And then apparently there was a Twitter account made, and the media were jumping over hoops about it, because they thought it was him. Whether it was him or whether it was a fake one, I think whoever it was put two tweets. There was all of the usual followers, about 6,000-7,000 followers, mainly Celtic fans.
Yes.
And it's now been deleted. So,
and 5,000 of them were actually Mad Phil and all his fake accounts that he's got.
So we'll leave that one there.
Yep.
Next thing is the Dave King issue. He hasn't put an offer in for the rest of the shares to the other shareholders after the Takeover Appeal Board's decision.
Now, what happens there, Derek? Again, you know me, I read snippets from social media, I read snippets from websites. I don't know the full ins and outs. What is your take on all of that? What is there going to be any sanctions? Could there be any sanctions put in place? Could there be any fines put in place? Where does that leave him and us? Does it mean that he will have to put in an offer, or is he flatly refusing to do so, or does that then make way for somebody else to come in and make an offer? How does it all work as far as you see it?
Well, it would be completely disingenuous of me to actually say one way or the other.
What a word. You'd be working on that one. Yeah,
this is my second rant of the day about fellow fans, is some of them are acting like Celtic fans know-it-all fuckers.
Well, Derek, is it maybe not the case that they are under fake names? Because there's been a few that me and you have become involved in and having rants with, and then when you look at the fact that there's hardly any followers and stuff, it makes you think that these are made up accounts. So, I mean, there will be genuine fans out there that just like to have a go that are against them, but I just have a feeling that the vast majority of these loon balls are actually supporters of other clubs that hate us that much that they would rather come on and pretend to be one of us to have a go. I wouldn't go too far into that, to be perfectly honest. It's
Some of them are like that, but I think some of them are genuine Rangers fans, and I'm all for having different opinions and commenting on that, but the ones who think they know it all and they say X, Y and Z is going to happen. I've had one person say to me, well, the instant punishment is, or the punishment is going to be 15 years banned in a jail term and a fine and things like that. Unless you are a legal mind who works in company law, you do not know exactly what the issue is. Now, all I can tell you, or all I really know, rather, is a case of he'll be getting taken to court by the Takeover Appeal Board, and that's with the view that they are going to get the court to compel him to make the offer. That's all the court is going to do. and that's what all the media are reporting. I am not a legal mind, so I don't know the all the ins and outs. And if any Rangers fans who isn't a legal mind know, say they know for definite, then I would take it with a pinch of salt, because there'll be so much involved in that that you've no idea. Dave King, he is a mind of his own by the look of it, but I don't think he's a stupid man. Yes, potentially he might go on the edge of what might be, I'm not going to say what might be legal, I'm going to say what might be the rules. But, you know, certainly if anybody questions his commitment to Rangers in terms of trying to help us, I just don't understand what that thinking is. He's already came out and said he didn't want to, but he has done. So what benefit to himself personally will that make?
Well, go back again, Derek, and we touched upon it quite a while ago. He's no squeaky clean. No. We all know that. But what other option did we have to try and get control back of the club and put it in the hands of actual Rangers men? He was the only option. Because look at the bloody state that we were in before he came in.
Yeah.
I mean, God only knows what position we would be in now. I mean, I know it's no great, the position that we are in, but at least there is a sign of improvement there. We've got a new manager in. There's, you know, there will be new players coming in next season. It gives us a bit of hope, but what the hell would we have been like if he hadn't have stepped in? What kind of position would we be in? We would still be under the rule of Ashley and Summers and the Easdales and all these guys. I mean, it's, if there'd have been a better option out there, Derek, I would have said, maybe you're right, but there wasn't. And this is the best option we've got by far. So why do people just know, you know, support as much as they can? But it's baffling to me, to be perfectly honest with you.
So I keep saying the fact that when Charles Green taken over, he got 100% of the club for $5.5 million, right? Yeah. And granted, there was a hell of a lot to sort out there. There was a potential CVA. There was the obvious, you know, go down the liquidation route, which we did do. Now, that was all still to be sorted out, which might have put people off. However, any decent billionaire or multimillionaire or sugar daddy, whatever you want to call him, could have got 100% of the club for $5.5 million back then. Why is this sugar daddy now going to come in, have to pay a lot more money to get a less percentage back? There's too many fans out there that are waiting for this sugar daddy to come in.
Yep.
And they think, you know, Mike Ashley, he might be the better option because he's got money. Oh, my God. You look at, you know, you don't even ask any Newcastle fan.
Yep. Ashley has not put money in Newcastle. Mike Ashley has used the money from relegation, the money from getting rid of these huge wages that he had in the Premier League, you know, the
TV money,
TV money, everything. That's the money that he's used to put in. He's not actually put any of his own cash in there.
He's left them in a hell of a lot of debt, though. That's the thing if he walks away.
It's unbelievable. And again, it goes back to the point that we made in the last one, Derek. We have been used to, over the years, having David Murray in charge, you know, this very wealthy man in charge of the club. That's what we in the past have said, oh, don't worry, because David Murray will pump a few more million in so we can go out and buy him and buy him and buy him. You know, that's the mentality that we've got, unfortunately, a lot of our fans have got, unfortunately, and it's quite worrying. It's maybe refreshing now that a lot of the younger guys out there are getting involved, you know, especially with the social media, young guys that are, you know, didn't see us when we were in, we were spending £14 million on players and stuff like that. It's maybe a good thing that these younger guys are getting involved now rather than the older guy, the old bastards like myself. I like to think, though, that I see things as, you know, I'm a realist when it comes to my club, but it's worrying, as you say. I think we need to cut the guy some slack, but again, the media are like rabid beasts when it comes towards him, Derek. He's in the media almost every day now, and they're desperate for something to go wrong with him. It's sickening again. The media have a lot to answer for when it comes to, you know, our club and the way things are treated, and I wish that we just had somebody that could come out and silence them all, but I don't think that's going to happen either.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the haters and all that kind of thing. I mean, we got mentioned by one guy for saying, if for sticking up for King with his decision not to, to make the offer. Well, we know we look for, if we're looking for the enemy within, then we'll just go to the iReady podcast.
But I mean, Derek, again, we are normal supporters. We're no, we keep saying this. And as for the people that keep getting myself and David Edgar can mixed up, I mean, come on. I mean, poor David Edgar, that's all I can say. With the work that that guy has done over the years with the supporters' trust to me, who's done nothing apart from talk on a podcast and put the odd tweet out and go and cheer on my team. David Edgar is a guy for the west of Scotland. I quite clearly have got a sort of centralised accent. I'm not from Ayrshire or wherever David comes from. I've never even met the guy before. I think I've maybe had one tweet from him before as well. If the people, again, if you're listening, listen to the Heart and Hand podcast and listen to David Edgar and then listen to me. I think you can quite clearly see or hear, sorry, that we are completely different people. And David Edgar actually does, you know what he's talking about, whereas I just blather a lot of shit and talk about, you know, the matches with you. That's it. That's basically what this pod is, Derek, isn't
pretty much,
it?
Yeah.
It's me and you talking about what's going on at the club. We've got no influence, we've got no say, but it's great the fact that we have got people that listen to us and get in contact with us and ask us questions and ask us to do stuff. It's excellent that way. That's how we treat it. We're just guys as if we would be speaking to a bunch of Rangers supporters down the pub. That's it. But for people to get me and him confused, it's absolutely incredible. So does that mean that your pal Scott that you had on the pod, does that mean that he's Scott Vandenacker? Is that maybe what they're thinking as well?
Funnily enough, his brother does sound exactly like him. So.
Oh no, I didn't do that. Yeah, so just to clear that up, mine, I am not David Edgar. End of. Poor David Edgar, eh? What a shame for the guy.
Just getting back to the actual Dave King situation is... For years and years, regardless of the subject, Rangers fans have moaned that, oh, the board are not sticking up for us, the board are not doing this, that and the other, the board are not fighting the case. Dave King is finally one of the people who's fighting, whether right or wrongly, he's fighting for Rangers, fighting for us. Now, mm-hmm. people are saying, well, oh no, the whole shareholding thing is just solely him. You know, any court case should be covered by him, money-wise. He should have, you know, stepped down as chairman. I'm sorry, but he's part of Rangers. The whole issue is Rangers shares. It's yes. not shares, Dave King shares, it's Rangers shares. So, yeah, he should be staying where he is in terms of that. And again, it's going back to people don't understand what a chairman's role is. Now, we've finally got someone who's willing to stand up for Rangers as an entity. Maybe not exactly what they want, but he's there fighting. And now all these same Rangers fans that were moaning with no defence over stuff, nobody's fighting for us, we're finally getting fought for and folk are complaining about it. I mean, yeah. folk are using his fight against Ashley as leverage for their argument against King. It's like, no, he's ripped up the contract which were in place with Rangers. Not a contract that him and Ashley had together, a contract yes. that Ashley had with Rangers. So, you know, he can't win, I don't think. And as you said, I think this whole not squeaky clean image has affected him in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, so... I don't know what to say to some of these fans because they're dead. There's no speaking to them, and you can tell that online.
At the same time, Derek, I'm going to be a bit controversial here, but there aren't many multimillionaires out there that are not squeaky clean, if you know what I mean. There's always been some business deal that's went wrong, or someone's complained that they've got, you know, they were rolled over by them, or, you know, there was some sort of dodgy dealings ongoing, whether it happened or not. So, you know, I think he would find it would be the same with nearly anyone. But just the fact that he is involved in Rangers, it is everything sensationalised in the media, as to be expected.
Yep. Next part here, the boardroom, just a quick one here, is Club 1872.
No, a quick one, Derek.
A quick one, aye. The members meeting that we said was going to happened, and, well, there's not been any notes about it because they never arranged sort of any note taker. Nobody had any pen or paper to take notes down, so That's what was mainly talked about. I think from the brief notes that from the brief thing that did come out from Twitter was it was a bit of a joke. You know, there was a statement read by Craig Houston, which he's kind of published online now by the look of it. And you know, I can't disagree with anything he said. It's a case of all the time when somebody sticks their head above the parapet when it comes to Rangers or any fans group. You know, they absolutely get, you know, pilloried, like he's happened, like's happened to David Edgar, like's happened to so many other people.
Yeah.
So
I certainly don't envy him, Derek. Don't envy any of the guys that are trying to do these. That's why I've never really said much about it. I know it's a task, and I know there's been a lot said about self-interest and stuff like that in that role, but it's certainly a role that I wouldn't volunteer for, and it takes a lot of determination. And it just, again, it keeps going back, Derek. We're just annoyed that it's not been, you know, really successful.
Yeah.
But I think
some of the defence was, oh, well, you've got to give these people time. They're volunteers. They're doing it off their own back. Yeah, that's well and good, but they put themselves in that position, so they should be held accountable. If you're going to hold, you know, somebody like Dave King to a standard, you've got to hold these people representing a fans group who you pay money to.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, you're not paying money to them. They're not benefiting from the money, but effectively, they're in control of your money to then go and do something responsible, like buy shares, like invest in another part of Rangers. So they've got to be that responsible to do that. So they've got to be held account for that as well. So, you know, the whole thing, oh, they're only volunteers, doesn't wash with me. They knew what they were signing up for. So, again, it's another saga. We will wait and see what happens with it. So,
yes.
Right. Move on now. It's Dave. It's your pop. It's the classic match.
The classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Right, Derek, I'm going back. We spoke about it on the last pod, or did we speak about it on the last pod, about Jonathan Johansson?
We did, yes.
Yes. So I thought, let's go back. I'll try and find a classic match. You know, Johansson was, you know, a successful striker for us. I was wanting to try and get a game that stood out where Jonathan Johansson scored at least one goal. And I found one. I was going back and I was actually at this match. It was on Sunday, the 8th of November, 1998. I was 23 years old at this point. No, I was younger than that. I'm talking absolute rubbish. I was 23 years old when this game took place. It was at McDermott Park. We played St Johnston in the league. I'll run through the teams for you at that point. A few players in the St Johnston team that you might remember, Derek, I'm maybe not expecting you to remember. It was quite a while ago. But Alan Main, certainly. Gary Bolan, Nick Dazovic. We also had George O'Boyle, Northern Ireland internationalist. And we had in the Rangers team on this particular day. Now, Dick Advocaat rested Barry Ferguson for the first time. He'd played for 22 games for us. He decided to rest him. He was just a young guy at the time. And his place was actually taken by Ian Ferguson, as we spoke about at the start, Derek. I didn't realise Ian Ferguson was still there at Rangers at that point.
Yeah.
Also, the other notable absentee for that game was Sergio Perini. So the Rangers team lined up with Antti Niemi in goals, a back four of Tony Vidmar, our versatile Australian Hotch, the superstar, was played at right back this time. He could play just about anywhere in defence. He was at right back. Colin Hendry, Lorenzo Amoruso, and then Arthur Newman at left back. In midfield, Kanchelskis on the right hand side, George Alberts on the left, Ian Ferguson and Giovanni Van Bronckhorst in the centre. And then up front, quite a deadly partnership at that point in the season was Rod Wallace and Jonathan Johansson. Now, in the Rangers substitutes bench was the big name signing for us at the time, turned out to be a bit of a flop, but was Stefan Guivarš, Derek, World Cup winner. He was a prolific goal scorer in France, went to Newcastle, had a bit of a torrid time, and we signed him for Rangers. This was going to be his first appearance for us. So the game got underway, and it was basically just one-way traffic, Derek, right from kick-off. Rangers on the attack, and it only took, it was only 10 minutes into the game, we managed to get a corner kick.
Van Bronckhorst with this Rangers corner, and it's crossed the line, has it? It has been given. The referee's given it. It's going to count, and Rangers have taken an early lead. Well, Wallace seems to be claiming it.
It's another superb ball in there. It's beat everybody. Yes, and it's definitely a goal, and it's definitely Wallace's. And all credit to the standside linesman, because he gave the goal here.
Giovanni Van Bronckhorst took the corner kick. The ball was sort of chested towards goal, flicked over by Wallace's head, over the line. The goalkeeper sort of parried it out, but you could see quite clearly Rangers had taken the lead. The ball was over the line, so that was only 10 minutes into the game. We were 1-0 ahead, and then it was less than 20 minutes later, on the 29th minute.
It's a touch of a pass for Arthur Newman. Slipping it through superbly to Rod Wallace, back for Van Bronckhorst. Excellent save by Mayne, but look who's there to pounce. It's the flying Finn, Jonathan Johansson.
Arthur Newman played a fantastic ball to Wallace. Wallace got to the byline, put the cross in. Giovanni Van Bronckhorst with a fantastic shot. Tremendous save by Alan Mayne, but it was only straight into the path of Jonathan Johansson, who tucked away the rebound to make it 2-0 to Rangers. And then only 2 minutes later after that, St Johnson completely rattled at that point.
Well, it's Albert, and it's no problem at all for George Albert, and it's a romp for Rangers, his 10th of the season, 6 of them from the spot, all as cool as that.
Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, who was outstanding in the match, he was in the box. He was brought down by Kane. Kane was given the red card. Last man, straight red. Alberts side-footed the ball, stroked it home for the penalty spot. That made it 3-0 to Rangers. So away in, very comfortable at that point. Half-time, Rangers made a substitution. Colin Hendry came off and Wilson came on. On the 64th minute, Rangers then stretched the lead to 4-0.
Brilliant clear, but here's Kanchelskis coming back for a bit more. Still Kanchelskis! That is absolute quality from Andrei Kanchelskis. He's had a fairly quiet night, but not anymore.
Andrei Kanchelskis on the right-hand side of the wing picks up a loose ball, cuts in, sidesteps two players as if they weren't there, fired a low shot, fantastic, right underneath Alan Mayne. That made it 4-0 to Rangers. And then on the 69th minute, Stefan Guivarch made his debut for Rangers, and within a minute, he was on the goal trail straight away.
Rangers pickering passes towards the St Johnstone goal, and Van Bronckhorst to Guivarch. A Guivarch! Oh! That is amazing!
Giovanni Van Bronckhorst passed the ball straight through to Guivarch. He had his back to goal, Derek. His back to goal. He's just sort of turned round with one flick and dinked the ball, chipped Alan Mayne perfectly right in to the goal. Absolutely fantastic goal. We're totally delighted. And then it only took him like 9 minutes after that to score his second goal for Rangers.
Kanchelskis. Just over Wallace's head. It comes to Guivarch! He's done it again! His second of the game, 6 of the best for Rangers tonight.
79th minute, Kanchelskis on the right wing. It was a low cross to Guivarch, who controlled it and then fired it tight angle into the near post past Alan Mayne. That made it 6-0 to Rangers. And then to cap it all off in the 85th minute,
could let Guivarch take it, but they got the cap, very professional. It's Alberts, and it's number 7, his second spot kick on this stormingly spectacular Sunday for Rangers, who are in 7th heaven.
Rangers were awarded another penalty kick. Now, Al Berts went to the sidelines to ask the permission of the manager to give the penalty to Guivar so that he could get his hat-trick. Dick Advocaat refused and basically told George Al Berts, no, you're my penalty taker, you take it. Which he did, stepped up, fired the ball into the net to make it 7-0 to Rangers. I was there that night. After that game, Derek, I was expecting Stefan Guivarch to go on and score about another 20-odd goals for us. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. It was a bit of a damp squid, unfortunately. In that season, though, Derek Guivarch, he won the treble for us, and he scored in the League Cup final win against St Johnstone again, which we won 2-1. So he did walk away from Rangers with a few medals under his belt, but he didn't score very many goals. He didn't last very long. And unfortunately, a few years later, he made it onto the Daily Mail's list, and he made it as the number one worst striker ever to play in the Premier League in England, which he wasn't very happy about, because basically he said, look, I only got 4 games for Newcastle and only scored 1 goal. And it was all basically down to the manager, but he didn't really do much more for us after that. But a dream debut for him anyway. Some fantastic goals, some fantastic players, and again, as I keep saying it, if you get the chance, if you're of a certain age and you've never seen some of these guys play, like say George Alberts, Lorenzo Amoruso, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, players like that, go and have a look on YouTube. There's loads of games out there, and I actually really enjoy going back and looking at matches. The only problem I'm having these days, Derek, is watching matches and saying, have we covered that game before? Because I can remember a lot of these games either from being there or seeing the highlights and not quite remembering if we've covered them over the last few years or not. But that's certainly an excellent game to go and watch, and a lot of goals to watch as well. So go and look at it. What did you think of the game, Derek? Can you remember it?
I was only 13 at the time. I looked back at the game when you said we were doing this, and you know, certainly some good goals and good performance.
Yeah,
obviously,
fantastic first goal for Guivarch. He sort of turn and chip over the goalkeeper, was an outstanding goal to score. And one of these, when you look back at some of the players that we did have on show, the likes of Kanchelskis, not outstanding for us. They really were.
Yep, absolutely fantastic. So we'll get another classic match again next time.
Excellent.
Right, next section here we've got is the news.
From ITN, the ITV News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
Right, a few bits and pieces we've kind of already alluded to here. We mentioned Jonathan Johansson. He was appointed the number 3 position by Pedro Kishina.
Yep.
Obviously, Kishina held personal interviews with a bunch of ex-players, and he was the one who came out on top. I thought initially it was quite strange, because I thought it was meant to bridge the kind of culture gap between, you know, Scotland and him and his own kind of staff that he's brought in.
I don't know, Derek. He's been here for quite some time, and his wife's Scottish as well, and yeah, stuff like that. So maybe it's not that much. He's certainly very qualified for it. He's coached at quite a high level. You know, he was one of the assistant coaches in the Finnish national team and stuff like that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I mean, he's certainly got there. I was actually hoping it was going to be somebody like Neil McCann, but I'm certainly not disappointed by it, Derek, and I really hope he does a good job and he gets stuck in, and you know, whatever he brings to the table, you know, is advantageous for us, and I'm sure it will be, you know. So
yep. Apparently an unnamed former player who was interviewed, and it's obviously that it was Barry Ferguson, this one.
It's quite funny because Heart and Hand didn't name him, but yeah, you just
right. I'll be waiting for that libel check go through.
Right, on you go.
Yes, a wee greeting to Keith Jackson, saying that he didn't understand the reasons why Pedro never gave it to him. As Heart and Hand said, if he doesn't understand the reasons, that's exactly the reason why he never got it.
Exactly,
then, so.
Yeah. I'm quite annoyed about him the day that he is. You know, a legend for us, and yeah, absolutely fantastic. A guy like him doesn't need to do things like that, Derek.
No. Michael Haller.
Still quite funny that you need.
Michael,
oh, sorry.
Yep, Michael O'Halloran, he apparently failed to turn up at an under-20s match, and he was told to train on his own, and basically he was apparently dropped for your squad as well. He's apparently now back training with us, but there's obviously speculation about what actually happened, whether he actually just taken the cream puff and didn't want to play in the under-20s game, or the fact that there was a story going about that he thought the under-20s coaches would get in touch with him and tell him the time and date, and they already thought he had been told about it and there was a miscommunication. I don't know, but certainly.
To be fair to Pedro Caixinha, he basically said the matter's been dealt with, end of story, and we're back to normal again. And that was it, end of. There was nothing more into it for him. He certainly didn't feel like, that the media were needing to know it anymore. So here's hoping it was just a misunderstanding, Derek. And we have spoken about him. We've got mixed feelings about the guy, but we just have to wait and see what happens there. I've got a feeling he might be away next season, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yep, £6 million to Leipzig.
Is that Dembele dollars?
Yeah, that's exactly that. Next thing, we mentioned that the supporters liaison officer, that was the job that a lot of people were going for, especially within Club 1872. Greg Marshall, the manager from the Loudoun Tavern, has been appointed that position by the club. Yep. So fantastic piece of news, and good luck to him in that.
Yeah, definitely. Good luck. I'm sure he'll have a backing of quite, a lot of supporters out there. So congratulations.
There's already somebody started a fake Twitter account pretending to be him as well. So
surely.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll go back to the homeland thing there, I think, again, Derek.
Matt Crooks has picked up a knee injury on his loan to Scunthorpe, out for the rest of the season. I think he was plagued with injury before he came to us as well, so it's not looking good. Again, it rings down to the fact that, we try and protect loanee players and other players go out on loan and get injured. So we'll see about that.
Yep.
There's rumours that we're meant to be signing Aberdeen captain Ryan Jack on a pre-contract.
Yes, I saw that, and again, straight away, the newspaper straight to Derek McInnes, who denied it and said that Ryan Jack said that he would never sign for Rangers and that's something that's never going to be happening and all that. But again, Derek, we will wait and see. I can't comment about the guy because I know nothing about him. Yeah. I've not really got any interest in Aberdeen or any other players, so I don't know if he's any good. I can't even tell you what position he plays in. All I can tell you is that he is the Aberdeen captain. I can't even say that I noticed him at the game that we played up at Pittodrie to say that he, stood out for me. But again, I'm pretty sad when it comes to things. I didn't really take notice of the other team that were playing to say who's been good and who's not, because like the vast majority of fans out there, we're basically concentrating on our own team and who's playing well and who's not playing well. So I can't really comment. I don't know if the guy's any good or not.
No.
Do you know anything about him?
No, it's the exact same as you. I don't really pay attention a lot of the time to other players and other teams. So
yeah.
Next one is Billy Gilmer, the youngster who's hotly rated, is meant to be going to Chelsea.
Is that official, Derek?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm not believing anything until the club confirm it, because it's been speculation for the last couple of months about him. So
talking about Billy Gilmer, did you know that the Old Firm Under 17 Cup final is live today on STV Glasgow?
Yes.
And so I don't know if he'll be playing in that or not. I've never really seen the guy play, but I'm certainly going to watch it. I'm quite looking forward to it. I know that Celtic are strong favourites to win it, because their youth team is apparently absolutely fantastic, but I'll go and watch it and I'll cheer Rangers on, and hopefully they do really well, and it maybe lets us have a look at some of the, the players. I don't know if some of the older guys are allowed to play in that or no, Derek. I know you know how in some of the under-20s games, like you were talking about, O'Halloran was supposed to be playing and stuff like that. I don't know if that's the same for this game or not, if any of the older guys are allowed to play. But you'd like to think if they were, and it's live on the TV, that this is a chance for them to shine, to sort of get back into recognition. So I'm looking quite forward to watching that. I don't know if you're going to watch it or not yourself.
Well, I would try and watch it, but you waffle that much, I've got a lot of editing to do, so...
Cheeky bastard! At least you said waffle and no talk shite.
That's just a given, though, isn't it? Next thing here is Rangers have opened their sensory room for children with autism. It looks a wee fantastic place.
Great idea.
It's you know, I think there was a wee bit of confusion because there's only like four seats at the kind of viewing window, and it's stuck right along at the far end. But it's to basically gradually integrate them into being in a stadium and amongst a lot of people like that. So once they're kind of used to they'll go and get a seat out in the main stand area, so they can keep the kind of keep it going with loads of different people there, so fantastic.
Great idea,
It's been getting widely praised as well, so
yes,
good to see. Still talking about it a year later, the Hibs fan who tried to punch Wallace at the Scottish Cup final, he also assaulted two fans during the incident. He was only given community service. Well, that's your justice system for you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we'll not say any more about that, Derek. I think we're all quite disgusted about everything that went on, and the punishments that have been handed out is shocking.
You can assault people and not get a jail term, but you can sing a few words and get a jail term. So
incredible.
And one of the last ones here, Andy Little picked up a horrendous injury in training with Stirling
Albion. I've seen the pictures. What actually happened to him, Derek? Do you know?
As far as I'm aware, it was a training room. Training ground incident where I'm guessing there's been a clash of heads.
Fractured skull and
fractured ice socket.
Brace, you know, the fact that he was in a massive blooming head brace and was, you know, bruised all over the place and bandages and all sorts. I was like, my gosh, I thought it'd be like a horrific car accident he'd been in or something. But for that to happen on the training ground is absolutely incredible. Yeah. So just hope he recovers fully. I know he's been tweeting stuff out and things like that, but it looked horrendous. So hopefully he's all right. He's on the mend.
Yep. Next one here, we've got SPFL bosses have ruled out the Hogmanay Old Firm fixture this year, however, have not ruled out for the future. Obviously, down to obvious reasons, takings were down for pubs and things like that because people were a wee bit worried if there was any trouble. So much for, they did actually state at the end of last year that the fixture was actually made by a computer. Obviously not then if they're actually saying that it's not going to happen this year. Then.
Yeah.
So, that's another story for another
exactly,
day.
Yeah.
The last one of today, as ever, we always like to kind of go into the weird and wonderful. Transgender prostitute sues wife of guy who died while they were in bed. A woman explains to a gobsmacked audience why she is suing the wife of her former lover who died while they were having sex. On the Spanish daytime television show inspired by George Rinda, the man's mistress recalls the sordid tale and affair of why she chose to sue the man's wife after his death. The young woman, Jennifer, revealed that her deceased lover, Miguel, had died while they were having sex, a tryst the deceased wife, Sylvia, had paid for as a birthday treat for her long-standing partner.
As you do.
Jennifer drops another revelation when she tells the audience, who are already in a state of disbelief, that she's a transgender woman who decided to retain her male genitals.
Oh my god. Oh dear. Even for this time during the day, Derek, I feel quite sick thinking about this.
Jennifer told the host, lawyer Anna Maria Polo, "After we had sex, he said I didn't fulfil his fantasy. His real fantasy was that he wanted me to penetrate him, so I had sex with him, and he liked it. I didn't think it was the first experience of that kind he had. Sadly, Miguel suffered a fatal heart attack while Jennifer was pleasuring him, which proved particularly traumatic for Jennifer, who couldn't detach from Miguel's body because I stuck my penis inside of him."
Derek, how can you be transgender but still have your male parts?
I don't even want to go there. Jennifer's penis was fractured by doctors in the process of detaching the pair, and this is why she's decided to sue Sylvia for $20,000.
But really, she's not a she, though.
Well, I don't know. I'm not wanting to get into that politics, to be honest. That's a
story for another day again, yes. Derek. Definitely. And again, it begs the question, You're some of these sites that you go to, I would hate to look at your web history of your computer. Anybody that didn't know you would be saying, what on earth is going on here?
Well.
Or sorry, people that do know you think that as well.
So, again, on that bombshell, that kind of wraps up the next part of this podcast.
Excellent. The one thing that I'd like to say, Derek, going into the game on Sunday, I am just hoping and praying that Rangers are up for it. As you say, they've been steadily improving after every game, and I would love us to go out and really put on a performance and beat them, you know, handsomely, you know, beat them at all eight areas of the pitch, leave them with absolutely no excuses whatsoever that they've been beaten. I know you said that you'd be quite happy if it was something really dodgy in the last minute or a penalty that were given. It was never a penalty and stuff like that, but I would love us to go out and completely play them off the park and win the game, be in control of the match from start to finish. I don't think it's going to be a tall order, but we're steadily improving. I think the manager is, you know, has got the players on side now, and I'm delighted the way that the youngsters have played. And if they keep going the way they have, then you know, I think we should, that we might be able to do it. I hope, but I'm no jinxing us by saying that. But I just hope that they go out and really put on a fantastic performance for the start of the match.
Absolutely cuff Celtic or a last minute dodgy decision, I don't care. As long as we get to the final and then Hibs beat Aberdeen in the other semi final and we smash popcorn teeth, you know, to bits, and then yeah, that'll be it.
Aye. If that did happen, Derek, I would be confident for playing Hibs in the final. I think we would beat them quite handsomely this time. I think there's still a lot of rawness there for what happened the last time, and I think I would have a good feeling. But let's just get on with this game first of all. Biggest game of the season for us. Really go for it, Rangers. Give us a performance to be proud of and go out and do it. So on that note, I'm going to say cheerio. We are the people. All the best, Derek. It's been a pleasure.
I wouldn't go that far, Dave. Come
on. Considering that you basically call me a gobshite. But well,
see you later. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Too much
of
your time, sorry about that.
I'm cutting all that out anyway.
It's no light, yeah.